welcome to 15 Minutes in Canberra. I'm Hayley Channer, Senior Policy Fellow with the Perth US Asia Centre. Joining me today is my friend Peter Lee. Dr. Peter Lee is a research fellow in the Foreign Policy and Defence Program at the Perth US Asia Centre's sister institute, the US Studies Centre. Peter's work explores security dynamics in the Indo-Pacific, including US foreign policy, middle powers, and alliance politics. He's also a Career Foundation Research Fellow at the University of Melbourne's Asia Institute, and Peter received his PhD from the Australian National University. Peter, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me, Hayley. It's great to finally be on the podcast.
Now, Peter, we first met actually in Seoul. At the time, you were working for the Asan Institute, which is a leading, if not the leading, think tank in South Korea. You've lived and worked in South Korea. I want to understand better, what's your view on the state of the bilateral relationship between Australia and South Korea? How have relations been tracking over the last decade or so, and how have they been ramping up recently?
It's a great question, Hayley, and I think it's very timely given that we met about a decade ago in Seoul when, in a former life where I worked at Asan and you worked at ASPI. I think the bilateral relationship has very much ebbed and flowed over that last decade. We've seen periods of interest, we've seen periods of complacency, and I think if you go back to about a decade ago, 2011, 2012 or so, it was really the high point of the relationship in many ways. And so my first journal article actually was on this exact issue of why Australia and South Korea seemed to deepen their bilateral security relationship in that period. At that point, you'll remember that we had the 2009 joint statement on security cooperation. We had an action plan. They initiated, 2+2 meetings between the foreign and defense ministers. We had bilateral military exercises and a whole range of really exciting new initiatives on the bilateral relationship. And yet, for some reason, for the last decade, it's really come and gone, right? So in 2014, we had the vision statement. 2015, we had the blueprint, CAFTA, the bilateral free trade agreement. And last year, we had the Bilateral Comprehensive Strategic Partnership. But between a lot of that, there have been periods where there was very little interest. If you think back to the last South Korean administration, it was almost 4 years without a presidential visit or any significant visit to Australia. So I think the question that really animates a lot of my research is why, despite all the things that drive South Korea and Australia together as US allies, as liberal democracies in our region, as capitalist economies, as middle powers, and why that cooperation has not gone as far as we would have expected.
Do you think it's because Australia was too focused on other relationships like with the United States and Japan and China, and it feels like South Korea just got missed, even though it's one of our top trading partners?
I think to boil down, my entire PhD thesis into like two sentences, it was really the role of leaders. But it was really that idea that despite all of these potential drivers for cooperation, and in many ways, they are more salient than how we deal with other countries in the region. It's really been that Korean leaders and Australian leaders at different points in time have not really been on the same page. And that's really been a challenge, I think, to understand where those points of congruence really exist. So that's been sort of the work that I've done to understand why those moments seem to flicker in time and how we can capitalize on it.
So you mentioned that we now have a comprehensive strategic partnership with South Korea. Do you think that we are moving closer to South Korea in all areas of the relationship? So not just security and defense, but economic and people to people? Or are there some areas that we're really quite close and getting closer and other areas that are still shallow?
Yeah, I think it's hard to say that all aspects of any bilateral relationship are equally advancing at the same pace. So I think in the Australia-South Korea example, really the economic relationship has gone far ahead of the security relationship, let alone the people-to-people relationship. And these are really the three pillars of the Bilateral Comprehensive Strategic Partnership that was announced last year. So I think on the bilateral economic relationship, it's really as good as it could be in many ways, in terms of the Korea-Australia Free Trade Agreement, but also the really exciting progress that we're seeing on things like critical minerals, renewable energy, a lot of the work that Perth US Asia has done with Gordon and your team over there. I think on the defense and security side, which is where my research was really sitting, that has really come and gone. And hopefully I think we're at a point now where we can expect a lot more progress. And there are a few reasons why, but I'll just very quickly boil it down to the regional strategic environment is obviously driving them closer together, but also exciting areas and things like defense industry, bilateral military exercises, and also the US role between those two countries that is really incentivizing cooperation. I think where it's most far behind is the people-to-people relationship. And that's a lot of the work that I'm doing at my Melbourne University position with the Korea Foundation. Really, how do we drive that bilateral people-to-people relationship that often lags behind in terms of public understanding about the bilateral relationship, about ordinary Australians and Koreans who don't necessarily have a deep understanding of each other's countries. And so we've really been trying to bring together Australians and Koreans from diverse sectors, from energy and agriculture to media and migration, all these areas where there is a lot of opportunity and progress happening, but it's not quite understood at the bilateral government level.
Mm. It's funny, Peter, you mentioned that your PhD was understanding the role of leaders in the two different countries. And in May this year, both Australia and South Korea had elections, federal elections. So we had change of government in both countries. I'm wondering about President Yoon Suk-yeol and what he has been doing for the bilateral relationship. Is his role making a difference in South Korea's relationships with Australia and the United States, or is it mainly the same and sort of maintaining?
I mean, so I penned a piece soon after the election that was sort of drawing parallels to a decade ago, since that was our opening question today, that there are parallels in terms of the compositions of the foreign policy and defense teams in both countries between a decade ago. So President Yoon's team is very much composed of the same people that were constituting President Lee Myung-bak's foreign policy and defense team a decade ago. And they've had a decade to learn and improve the strong achievements that they achieved in that period. I think what I was trying to make the point of in that argument was that we have an opportunity here to take a really ambitious approach to the bilateral relationship in a way that we tried to do a decade ago, but that's somewhat been lacking today, to really progress their cooperation on the world stage, and particularly in our region. Going to your point about President Yoon's performance, I think many of the early signs on the foreign policy and defense side, at least, are quite promising. And I think, for instance, their discussion about how Korea is going to be a global pivotal state that Foreign Minister Park Jin has talked quite frequently about. President Yoon's first overseas travel was to the NATO Madrid summit, where he held the first meeting of the Asia Pacific Four with Japan, Australia, New Zealand, and Korea. We also seen, you know, a re-engagement with groupings like MICTA. Foreign Minister Penny Wong has already held multiple sideline meetings with Foreign Minister Park Jin. So I think on quite a lot of these issues, and even in terms of like South Korea-Japan relations, or pursuing a more pragmatic approach to North Korean deterrence, many of these are in sync with where Australia is heading, but also where the broader grouping of allies and partners are going. So I think in that sense, the signs are promising. Whether they can follow through is obviously the hard question.
Thank you for mentioning North Korea, because obviously in early October, North Korea again became part of the news cycle, and it has always been a factor sort of looming in the background of Australia-South Korea relations. And after almost 5 years without having a missile test over Japan, North Korea launched a missile over Japanese territory. I'm wondering, why do you think North Korea has had this missile test now? And is the threat from North Korea getting worse, or is this just sort of more of the same and actually the threat hasn't increased?
It's been quite interesting to track the North Korean nuclear crisis ever since the period of Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un. I think it's fallen off the radar in many ways for the US policy community, and also to Australia in many ways. We've increasingly dealt with challenges from China and Russia, and so North Korea is not the top priority for many of the region's policymakers. I think the recent ballistic missile test is a reminder, though, that North Korea remains one of several important strategic challenges that the region faces, that the region does not face only one serious security threat.
For Australians, North Korea isn't a big topic, not like it is for South Korea. However, Australia was the second country to join the Korean War on the South Korean side. I'm wondering, do you see any capacity for the North Korean crisis, or, you know, the North Korean question? Does it actually help and provide an avenue for closer relations between Australia and South Korea, or do you see it more as a limiting factor in the relationship?
So one of the key questions I've been grappling with for many years was, can a common threat drive two countries like Australia and Korea together? Recently and today, it's really the question of China. Will the threat of China drive Australia and Korea together? In previous years and decades, it was, will a North Korean threat that has a regional consequence drive these countries together? I think the evidence on that is quite mixed. What I found is that there are some leaders and some governments who do see that as a threat. And so if you think back to the third North Korean nuclear crisis, for instance, there were commentators in Australia who were advocating for missile defense, purely based on the North Korean long-range ballistic missile capability, as though North Korea was going to nuke us.
Yeah, we're important too, Peter.
We are important, obviously.
We wanted to feel like we were important.
Having said that, Australia has a long-standing interest in the resolution of the North Korean crisis and the North Korean threat. And it goes to questions of non-proliferation, it goes to questions of regional stability in Northeast Asia, where our economic future is very much tied to. And so we have our own interests in that. And I think quite over the last few years, that has actually been neglected or downplayed in many ways because of other more urgent challenges around the world. Mm. But I think we do actually have a national interest in how the North Korean nuclear crisis is resolved.
Mm. Peter, my final question is actually about minilateralism in the Indo-Pacific. And in recent years, we've seen an explosion of different minilateral groupings. Obviously, last year, there was AUKUS, which is Australia, United Kingdom, United States. There's also the Quad, obviously, and small trilateral arrangements. However, the only minilateral grouping that Australia and South Korea are part of is MICTA, the Mexico, Indonesia, Korea, Turkey, Australia grouping. I've always said I want Australia and South Korea to work together minilaterally, and my preference would be outside of MICTA. Do you actually see a possible role for a sort of trilat, whether that be Australia, South Korea, United States, or one that I've thought which would be great, which is Australia, South Korea, India, Indonesia for a different kind of quad? But do you think that idea has got legs, and would it actually be something that's feasible that South Korea would want to be interested in doing?
It's a tough question, and it's one that I've also grappled with. And I wrote a recent piece for the Korea on Point publication at the Sejong Institute in Korea on exactly this idea of South Korean minilateralism. Because I think there are three sort of competing impulses within South Korean discourse about minilateral groupings. First, there is this ambivalence about what South Korea actually would gain from these groupings that it would not otherwise gain through bilateral cooperation with any of its constituent parts. I think there is also a degree of envy that when it looks at some of these minilateral groupings taking shape and really sort of accelerating, such as the Quad, that there are people in South Korea, particularly in the policy circles, who see that South Korea is missing out on something that, you know, it should be a part of. But also I think there is that idea of strategic ambiguity, that South Korea has an alliance, it has bilateral partnerships with many countries, including Australia. What is the benefit of those? So I think it's really those tensions between envy of ambivalence and even ambiguity about where South Korea wants to go. So if you look at the last administration of President Moon Jae-in, it did not enter into new minilateral groupings. It pursued things like the New Southern Policy, which is essentially a South Korea with another multilateral grouping of the ASEAN countries. I think President Yoon has tried to sort of push, at least in the election and early on, closer cooperation with these minilateral groupings, such as the Quad, such as participating in the AP4 on the sidelines of the NATO summit. But again, I think the question still lingers. Even in Korean conservative circles, what do these groupings add value to that Korea doesn't otherwise get from its alliances or its other bilateral partnerships? I think there is a very good case to be made that Korea needs to join some of these groupings which directly advance national interests.
Peter, I mean, we've covered so much ground, but I often wish these episodes were longer than 15 minutes, and I'm sure this one's going to stretch Thank you so much for taking the time to explain the Australia-South Korea relationship, some other regional dynamics like what's happening with North Korea, and also this question of minilaterals. I really appreciate you coming on 15 Minutes in Canberra.
My absolute pleasure, Hayley.